We move on to the 1990s, and it's not great. Not great. Not a great decade. But we're going to talk about it here on the Wednesday Locked On Celtics. Move. Let's go. Rainy J's back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly. John Corrales here from MassLive.com saying once again, thank you for making the Locked On Celtics podcast part of your daily routine. I really do appreciate the fact that you're downloading the show Monday through Friday, even through this hiatus. We continue our deep dive, our jaunt through Celtics history that brings us today to the 1990s. But if you go back for the past month, we started in the 1950s. So if you haven't listened to that, you can go back to the beginnings of the Boston Celtics, why they were even named the Boston Celtics, how Red Auerbach almost became the Duke head coach instead of the Boston Celtics head coach, and all of the things that happened in between then, 50s, 60s, 70s. We did the 80s for 2 weeks, and now we're going to go into an extended conversation into the 1990s. And this podcast is brought to you by Built Bar. It is a delicious protein bar. It tastes just like a candy bar. This morning, I've been going through my samples. I got a box from them and have been loving what they sent me. I had coconut almond this morning, and it was like eating a Milky Way bar. Awesome. For me, eating them for breakfast has been a part of my new routine. 130 calories, 18 grams of protein, no excess sugar, no excess carbs. It's perfect for a quick breakfast on the go. So go to BuiltBar.com for $10 off your first order with the promo code LOCKEDON. Today, we begin the 90s conversation with Chuck McKinney and Mike Dinan of RedsArmy.com. We're going to start looking at the, just kind of initially, our thoughts of the decade as a whole, and we get into the kind of end of the Big Three era. Larry Bird is back, but it's kind of the beginning of the end. So let's begin our conversation now with Mike and Chuck.
One member of Red's Army wasn't enough. We had to pull in another. Chuck McKinney joining me with Mike Dinan. How are you guys feeling? You ready to talk about the 90s? I'm feeling good. I feel pumped. Yeah. Right.
It's the old, do we have to? And then it's the old, 90s. I don't have anything else to do. Might as well.
Well, this is a depressing decade. You know, you think of the 90s, it's like so many things. You just, I'd rather not think about this. I'd rather not think about Bird and McHale and DJ retiring and Parrish leaving, and you've got Reggie Lewis tragedy. Eventually we'll get to like ML Carr and Rick Pitino. There has to be like a sliver of positivity in this decade. I guess it's at the beginning of the decade, I would say.
Yeah, the first 3 years weren't so bad. They did have some good teams then, over 50 wins and a couple of division titles. It was just after that that things started to go south.
I mean, I think the celebratory moment is the playoff series against the Pacers, correct?
Yeah.
So that was really like Bird's last hurrah, which, you know, in a way was prefaced by him smashing his face on the, you know, parquet floor and then coming back out later in the game. And Chuck Person was such a, you know, such a little son of a bitch in that series. So it was nice to see Larry get his final little, you know, to take that series. So, you know, for me, at least on the court, I think you could fast forward and you could look at some of the, you know, we acquired Paul Pierce in the 90s, so it wasn't all bad. But I think on the court, it would have to be that Pacers, that playoff series and that playoff win.
You also have D. Brown winning a dunk contest. I mean,
woo! Drink to that.
I will. I have a picture of myself with D. Brown. After D. Brown won that dunk contest, he did a mall tour around the Boston area, which went to the Emerald Square Mall in North Attleboro, which was not far from where I lived at the time. I grew up in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. And I participated in a dunk contest with D. Brown at the Emerald Square Mall, which is like one of the weirdest things. But I have a picture of me with D. Brown in the paper with my cheesy high school mustache in 1991.
Did they give you a trampoline?
Back then, in my youth, I had a little bit of jumping ability. But my favorite story from that dunk contest is I did a dunk where I jumped. I kind of like I reached and tapped the backboard and like reached over and dunked it. Okay. To me, I was like, that's impressive. Tap the backboard, reach over and dunk it. So I was like, all right, feeling good about myself. Not that D. Brown was in the dunk contest, but like afterwards he did dunks. Like he did the show off thing. He went up. I don't know if it's exaggerated in my head over the course of the years, but I just remember him going up. And now remember, I'm proud of myself for barely pulling this dunk off. D taps the board twice, boom, boom, cocks it behind his head, and then two hands slams it through. And I was like, Jesus Christ. It's the difference between, yeah, I can dunk, and NBA slam dunk champion, where he's just up there floating, like, I'm going to tap it. I'll tap it again. I'm going to think about it, and then I'm going to dunk it. And it was just kind of wild.
Yeah, I mean, D was fun, right? But he was just another one of those guards that the Celtics had. I don't know what his numbers were. I just don't remember him amounting to much. And maybe our expectations back then were a bit high. But I do remember watching, you know, recently catching one of the rebroadcasts, and it was that that Pacers Celtics playoff series, and just observing the Celtics guards, and I think it was Brown and Brian Shaw who were guards in that series. Unless Brown came right after.
Nope.
Brown came in the 1990 draft.
He did. So he was there, right? But he really, you know, I'm correct. But my thinking was, he's not really a point guard. They had him bringing up the ball, and they had the same thing with Brian Shaw, but they weren't real point guards. I mean, I know that they had Larry to be a point forward, but I just never understood what the hell they were doing with those two guys.
I don't think they understood it either.
I mean, there was a whole history with Shaw, right? I mean, he came in the late 80s, but he was still on the team in the 90s. And, you know, I feel like his best years may have been later when he was, you know, a veteran presence on a contending team.
Well, Brian Shaw was like, in that regard, he was like Rick Fox, who was on the Celtics for a few years and then went to the Lakers after the Celts let him go. And both of them were in Boston. They were relied on to be main men and be real contributors. And in L.A., with the better team, with Shaq, they only had to be role players. So they found where they were suited to play, and it paid off for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's always most painful for a team when you know, you draft a guy in the first round, could be mid first round, and then, you know, expectations are that they'll be one of your main men. And then it's like, nah, he's not quite at that level. And then he moves on, and then they have that, you know, they do have moments where they're good role players. But we unfortunately had to watch them. Maybe Shaw more than Rick Fox kind of languish here in Boston.
I've walked down the aisle where protein bars live in stores and have been confused by what I should have. What's really good for me? I see all of these grams of protein, but what else is in there? Don't bother with that. Go to BuiltBar.com for the most delicious protein bar that you're going to find on the market. You can go and customize your own box. You can try a bunch of flavors to figure out what you like. I this morning had coconut almond, which was a lot like a Milky Way bar. It was kind of marshmallowy. It was really good. And that was only 130 calories and 18 grams of protein. My morning routine now, Built Bar, banana, my morning coffee, a glass of water, and I've got all of the things my body needs to get started. Protein, the good carbs, not the crappy carbs that come in some of these other bars. It really gets me started, gives me a nice boost, all the nutrients that I need to start my day. Built Bar, when you compare them to some of the other things, I used to eat a Clif Bar every morning. That's 250 calories, net carbs of somewhere up in the 30s, sugar, 20-something grams of sugar. Built Bar, 4 grams of fat, 5 net carbs, 4 grams of sugar in the coconut chocolate bar. 110 calories. How can you beat that? You get yourself 15 grams of protein in that particular bar. All of these bars have something like 15, 16, 17, 18 grams of protein. All of them are under 200 calories. You don't get all the excess sugars. You get exactly what you want in the most delicious protein bar that you can find. So if you go to BuiltBar.com, you can customize your box or just buy a bunch of the ones that you already like and use the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first purchase.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
But just to take it all back to that, you know, sort of that Pacers series. For me, that's what I think about when I think about, you know, Bird's last hurrah. And then there was also that, John, I don't know if you have an agenda or a rundown or anything, but I'm just kind of
We're talking through the initial feelings of the decade, and then we'll go back year by year. So let's just get all the thoughts out there now, and then we'll go back and we'll start at the beginning of the decade. It's fine.
I mean, Larry had that 49-point game against the Blazers. I think it was like a Sunday afternoon game. It may have gone into overtime. Am I close to being correct on this? One of his last best games, right?
Yep, that was his last best game. His final year. It was a Sunday afternoon. You're correct about that. Against Portland, which was one of his favorite opponents because he always torched them. And he went double overtime. He made a 3-pointer off the wrong foot or something to send it into overtime, and it was his. He played, I got the numbers here, 54 minutes, scored 49 points, shot 19 for 35, 14 rebounds, 12 assists, 4 steals. This was with a back that, you know, belonged in a nursing home.
But he was still an all-star that year.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that was his last, as Chuck said, his last hurrah, the last great performance that we expected from him over his whole career.
So, yeah, that was now we're making it like sad again. Like, oh, it was his last great performance. Look, we're going to start here with the 89-90 season. That 1990 season is like Bird's back off of the Achilles injury. He played 6 games the year before, and the Celtics, they end up being a 52-win team. This is like the last gasp of the Celtics. And one of the questions here, I'm gonna bring the Danny Ainge conversation back, where he at one point in the mid 80s was talking about like talking to Red. He was sitting there with Red and Bird and McHale, and he was kind of busting their balls a little bit by saying, "Is it true you can get these guys for Kevin McHale? You should do that. You can get this guy for Larry Bird. You should do that." Looking at this 89-90, this first season of the decade, Bird is back off the injury. He averages like 24 and almost like 24 and 10, and like almost 8 assists per game. Like he comes back and he's good.
Yeah. But and he's 33. He's 33.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously you. This is this hindsight. You say, well, you know, we're sitting here. We watch Paul Pierce get traded. All these other guys get traded. one of the things I love about Larry Bird is that he was always a Boston Celtic. And Red Auerbach was never going to let any of those guys not be a Boston Celtic if he could help it. I wonder if there was, after the tragedy of Len Bias, I wonder if there was a feeling of like, maybe they should have looked into like, hey, he's 33. He just was an all-star. Maybe some contending team would want him. Maybe if Danny Ainge is running this team, that he moves Larry Bird this season.
I mean, I don't think they only would have traded him if he agreed to be traded, right? So I just don't think they would have cast him away if it wasn't to a team and a location that he wanted to play in. I just think there was that much respect there. And for me as a fan, even, you know, I was in my 20s, so I wasn't, you know, well, approaching my 20s. But I think for me, it was always, I wanted, you know, it was just no thought to trading Bird. And I don't know, maybe I just was still too much of a fan and didn't want to look at it that way. But I just had no interest in trading Bird. He was just too much of that iconic figure. And, you know, just I don't think they would have traded him unless it was something he wanted.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, he and the Parrish, McHale, the big three, they represented the Celtics. They were the face of the team, Bird most of all. You know, Red was a hard ass, of course, as a coach, but he was considerably older by this time, and maybe he mellowed a little bit. I don't know I'm just guessing at that, but he wasn't at that point. Probably he was not as cutthroat as Danny would have been if he was in that spot. So I didn't want them to be traded. And I think the only thing that held up Bird and McHale was their declining health. Otherwise, they could have been much more effective in their later years.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is – I suggest it because, you know, I feel dirty suggesting it. I love everything, and I wouldn't want that either. And going back to our last conversation, Mike, where they didn't know when Bias was going to die. They didn't know Reggie Lewis was going to die. This is
right.
You know, Reggie at this point hasn't he's been drafted at this point, right? Like
he came in a couple of years earlier.
Yeah. So now he's going to be, now Reggie is starting to like come into his own and show that he can be a pretty good player. So
yeah.
We're now in the right, because 1991, the tragedy strikes. The Celtics don't know that that's happened. They still feel like we got Reggie, he's good. We can ride Larry, we can ride Kevin, we can see if you make a couple of moves. They become your veteran leaders. You know, they are your veteran leaders, but. You're right. The back issue, the Achilles issue, the Larry Bird is never quite the same. He never feels the same, even though he comes back with an all-star season in 1990. The Celtics in 1990, this is the last year Dennis Johnson is on the team. Jim Rogers gets fired after this season. So we are about to usher in the Chris Ford era. So Larry Bird's going to be playing for one of his former teammates. And in this season, the Celtics make the playoffs. They, like I said, 52-win team. They win the first two games against the New York Knicks, and all of a sudden, boom, you lose three in a row, and the Celtics get bounced in the first round for the first time in forever. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram.
It was kind of like it was representative of the whole decade. They started out strong and then they died, you know. That some of the numbers in that series are ridiculous. They won the first two at home, like you said. The game two, the Celtics shot 67%, and they won by 157 to 128, 157 points in a playoff game. Oh. And then the Knicks won the next two in New York, but they came back to Boston for the game five, which was a five-game series. At that point, the Knicks had lost 27 straight in Boston, 27 consecutive losses, and they you expected the same would continue, and they came out determined, apparently. And the backbreaking plays in the last couple of minutes, Larry missed a reverse dunk, and then Ewing hit a three-pointer to beat the shot clock, his only attempt of the series. And those broke the back.
That the image of Bird missing that reverse dunk is forever burned in my brain. Because I do remember watching that series with some friends who were not Celtics fans, and they were busting my balls heavy. You know, when Bird missed that dunk, that was a pivotal play. And you really, not that you didn't know Larry was aging and dealing with stuff, but that was just like, you know. You know, 86 Larry, you know, that doesn't happen to 86 Larry. That doesn't happen to 87 Larry. But just to see that, and then go to the Knicks, who, as we've discussed many times, have, you know, very few exciting moments in their long overrated. but I do remember that play, and that does sting. Thanks for bringing me back down, Mike, because I was trying to hope. Some of the positives of
that's why we're here, Chuck.
But that still hurts.
The Celtics got 4 points off the bench in that game five, that deciding game five. John Bagley, in fact, nobody hit a bucket off the bench. It was all free throws. John Bagley, Joe Klein, Jim Paxson, Ed Pinckney, Michael Smith. I mean, Bird played 46 minutes in this game. They rode these guys hard. So Bagley and Klein played 9 minutes. Paxson played 7, Pinckney 2, Smith 1. So there wasn't a lot of time off the bench for them to do much, but they didn't even hit a bucket. They were 0-4-7 in that time off the bench. And obviously that's kind of like par for the course. We were talking about the Celtics. Like they at this point, they have got no help. It's the big three. It's DJ, Reggie Lewis, and that was it. And how much can you expect Larry Bird to do? He still scored 31 points, you know, and how much can you expect Kevin McHale? He played 45 minutes on paper mache ankles. He still gave you 17-7. It was the Celtics just at that point, they weren't constructed to win long term. They didn't have anything besides their starting five.
You know, you mentioned Michael Smith. He was a rookie from the previous year he was drafted. You know, he was a pick like number 12 or 13, I think. And they took him instead of Tim Hardaway. That could have helped if they had gone for Hardaway. But Michael Smith was expected to be a solid contributor, and he wiped out in 2 years. He was a bust. And also that year, we didn't mention that Brian Shaw, who had played his rookie year, decided to leave. He just bolted to Italy, played for a team there called Il Messaggero. And, you know, he violated his contract, but somehow they couldn't bring him back. So they really didn't have a lot, you know. They had a few years there where they got pretty much nothing from the draft. And that is why Bird and the rest of them, the starters, they end up playing heavy minutes. It wasn't just that year. That was a pattern for several years, going back to when KC was the coach and he didn't want to play the young guys.
You know, it's just that they had some magnificent hits in the draft, and they had some, you know, awful misses, obviously. And it just is reinforced when you know, I think obviously Lenny didn't play any games, but you know, I think he was just one of those rock solid certainties. So it's just, you know, to keep thinking back at the two guys that they really hit on, Reggie and Lynn, and then to see other guys who they whiffed on, not contributing to much. It just added to the sting.
We're just getting started here. There's a lot more to discuss with the 1990s, including more on the meaning of D. Brown's slam dunk championship. That had meaning to it, even though it's just a slam dunk thing. There's meaning to that. The Dream Team. We have an extended discussion on the Dream Team coming up this week, and all of the things that happen in between. There's a lot, even though this is not the best decade, there's a lot that happens and lessons to be learned throughout the entire thing. Each franchise goes through downtimes like this, even though the Celtics hadn't to this point. This is their turn, and this is an important part of understanding why the future things that happened had so much meaning. So we will be discussing all of that throughout the rest of this week and next week as we continue into the 1990s. So please subscribe if you haven't. If you are a subscriber, I really do appreciate a 5-star rating and a good written review. I would also appreciate it if you went to builtbar.com and used the promo code LOCKEDON to get $10 off your first order of the most delicious protein bars you're ever going to taste. They really are something that I've enjoyed over the past week. It's something new that I've found, and I'm very happy that they're sponsoring the show because it's something that I'm incorporating into my daily routine as I try to stay healthy, get even healthier, and now I have something that's delicious, that comes in nut-free, if those of you who have a nut allergy, gluten-free if you have a sensitivity to gluten, covered in chocolate. It tastes great, but still healthy. You're not getting all of the extra carbs and sugars that you're going to get in some of the other leading brands. So go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first purchase. Now go ahead and tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Rejecting the Screen.